Okay. So last week we were in the middle of finishing. As we said, we're in the last parsha of Chumash Vayikra, which is the third Chumash, and we were doing in Parshas Bechukaisai last week in Perek Chavav, chapter 26. We had the psukim of the brachos. That's what we had, the blessings, and they were beautiful psukim. Psukim which shared magnificent brachos as we went through some of them that we will experience and some of them that we have experienced already and that we are experiencing it and some that we will experience when Mashiach will come. But mainly they are actually blessings, as we said, that it started for every Jew as the parasha started, im b'chukaisai teilechu. The condition, so to speak, was just walking in Hashem's ways. And as we qualified that, that means learning Hashem's Torah. That was the main emphasis, that you learn in depth. You learn more than just in depth. You learn in a way where that's your whole occupation, where that's your whole focus, where nothing else exists. That's your main, you know, your main pleasure, that's right. And that's what you do, and that's im b'chukai said to you, amelim b'teira, you should be involved in learning Torah, in a sense almost like a business, as we said, when a person has a business, they, if it's your own business, it's not 9 to 5, you take it home with you, you sleep with it, that's right, you eat with it 7 days a week. And that's what Torah is supposed to be, our business, where it's constant, it's consistent, it's all the time. Then we'll go on to the next part. As we said, this is the part that I don't like to do, but we'll run through it. And actually, there are some beautiful parts, even though on surface level, it is very heavy and quite negative and quite harsh. Because this is generally known as, there's two ways to look at it. Either the toichacha is the Hebrew word, which in English you translate as admonishment, like to tell somebody off, because these are all the warnings of what all the negative things that will happen if you don't learn Torah properly, or you can call them on a really sort of black and white way, klolus, curses, because that's what they seem to be, a lot of them. Unfortunately, the Jewish people have experienced many of them, and as we mentioned, this is not the only place in the Torah, it's here, and at the end of Chumash Devarim in Parshas Kisavai, where it's even more at length and even more harsh. The difference here, it is in plural. In Parshas Kisavai, it is said in the singular. Here it is addressing the Jewish people as a whole. And according to some opinions, this is referring to the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, whereas in Chumash Devarim, it is more dealing with the time of the second Beis HaMikdash and the Golos we are in now. Although some opinions say that this is also to do with all of Jewish history, not just the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, but all the terrible suffering that we've had from that time up until today. The reason why some people say that this is more connected to the time of the first Beis HaMikdash is because amongst the psukim, there are a few allusions to the fact that many of these punishments come because we didn't keep the mitzvah of Shemitah. And the mitzvah of Shemitah and Yovel were really properly kept during the first Beis HaMikdash, more than during the second, because during the second Beis HaMikdash, not all the Jewish people lived in the land of Israel. So that's why some people say it's referring more specifically to the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash. But what we're going to do is, I just want to read, I know we've read this pasuk a million times, but I just want to show you, just to start, so I'm going to have to make you guys mamish disappear. Okay, because I can't see the text. So if you look on page 1, some of your booklets are a bit different to some, because I didn't want to just make copies for nothing, so you'll forgive me, but it all has numbers. So page 1, that's the first page. Just again, im b'chukaisai, as we said, im b'chukaisai teilecho. I just want you to notice, it starts with an aleph, right? That's the bracha, start with an aleph. That if you walk in my ways and you keep my mitzvahs, vasisem oisam. Now if you go down to page number 2, I want to just read you one more pasuk in page 2 that we've read already, but then Hashem says, in page 2, it says in pasuk 12, v'hishalachti b'soichichem, I will walk among you, v'hayisalachem lalekim, I will be your God, and v'atem to you lila'am, and you will be my nation. I'm stressing that pasuk because we'll see the opposite today in the curses. And then just to go to the last pasuk of the blessings, because we've done this, on page number 3, go to page number 3, and you'll see on page number 3, we have, let's see what's here. Okay, so it is pasuk, first of all. I want to show you something. Let's see which pasuk I want to see. Maybe it's before. Sorry. Maybe it's even on page number two, but I'm just looking, sorry. Let's see if it's page two or three. No, let's look at page two first. Sorry about that. Page two, before we go to page three. Because I want to see one pasuk before that. Okay, just to look at the last pasuk, the last three words of the brachas. It says, in pasuk yud gimel, on page two, it says, v'oilech eschem koimimius. Do you see that? Then, which means that I led you upright, right? I led you upright. We go with pride. We go with strength, with confidence. What's the last letter? Do you see the last letter of the brachas? What letter is it? A tough. The brachas are from aleph to tough. From the beginning of the aleph base to the end, meaning all, you know when you say something's aleph to tough? In Yiddish, it's an expression. It means all-inclusive. It includes everything. It's all-encompassing. The brachas, even though it's only a few psukim, and they seem quite abbreviated, I mean, they're beautiful, but they're not that lengthy. The curses are much more lengthy. There are much more psukim with curses. I think there's like 11 of brachas, and then there's like 29 of curses. So it's quite, you know, it's quite a difference. Nevertheless, with the brachas, it's from aleph to tav, meaning that these are more like headlines. These are more general, yeah. And underneath, there are many brachas included, every bracha you could imagine. Now, if you look at the klolos, I wanted to show you something. We're going to come back. Look at the klolos. It starts, the next pasuk, yudalid, v'im loisishmu, but if you will not listen, which means it starts with the letter vav. We're going to come back, but just for a second. Go to the end of the psukim, which is on page 6. We're going to come back to this, but just for a second, turn to page 6, because I want to show you the last pasuk of the klolos. Let me show you here. Okay, let's see where we are here. The last one. The last one says, Eila hachukim, it's pasuk mem vav, Eila hachukim, v'hamishpatim, v'atayres, asher noson Hashem, beino yuvein b'nei Yisrael, v'har Sinai, b'yad, Moshe, right? So these are the statutes, the ordinances, and the laws that Hashem gave between himself and the children of Israel by the hand of Moshe. What's the last letter? A hey. Starts with a vav and it ends with a hey. What does that mean? Which letter comes before the letter vav? Hey. Hey comes just before vav. But it starts with a vav and it ends with a hey, showing that it finishes before it even starts. In other words, it's not giving any space for the negative. Do you realize? It's like, you know, there's a very good expression in Yiddish from Esther Tannis bis Purim. I don't know if you ever heard that one. So what it means is if somebody wants to say, like, it's not going to happen, it's not really ever going to happen, you say from, like, Tannis Esther till Purim, which is no time between, right? So it's not really going to happen. So here starts with the vav, ends with the hey, which is a letter before it, meaning it doesn't really, Hashem is going to make it happen quickly, that's what we hope, that he's not even going to make it happen, and that's the idea, as opposed to the brachas, which are aleph to tav. So that's one way of looking at it, and even though it's longer, perhaps it's longer because the idea being that it wants to scare us, so it shouldn't actually have to take place, and that's why it's said in such a detailed way. Okay, different ways of looking at it. Now, sorry to make you crazy with your pages. Turn back now. Let's look a little bit at some of the psukim and try to understand what's actually taking place here. So if we look at page number 2, because that's where it starts, as we said, we read through all the beautiful brachas, and we saw how Hashem is going to give us so many beautiful things. And then as we see here, it begins right away, but, the big but, v'im. So, it's all very nice and good, all these good things that we're hoping for. But that all happens if you are a Melim B'Torah. But what happens if you're not? If you decide that Torah is not relevant, doesn't matter, isn't something you want to spend your time learning. Let's see what he says. If that happens in Pasuk Yudalid, in verse 14, V'im loisish me'uli, but if you do not listen to me, V'loisa sues kol ha-mitzvahs ha'ela, and you do not perform all of these mitzvahs, and then I'll read the next pasuk and we're going to analyze and see that there are 7 mistakes that we make, one leading to the next, and they all lead to disaster. Let's look in the pasuk Tezvav a minute just to read it. V'im b'chukai saitim asu. See, this is the opposite of in b'chukai saitei lechu. Im b'chukai saitim asu. If you despise my statutes, v'im es mishpatai tigael, and you reject my ordinances, Let's see. Nafshechem, you, your soul. Levilti asayses kol mitzvaysai, not doing any of my mitzvahs. Lahafrechem esprisi, thereby breaking my covenant. And then Hashem says, if you do all of that, I'll read one more pasuk and we're going to come back. I'm just going to read one pasuk here because this is a really harsh one. Not going to go too much in depth, but he says, what will happen? It's almost like a direct result. You act in a way where you don't care about my mitzvahs. You treat them with disdain. You despise them. So I will do the same to you. Look how he says, and what will I do? V'hifkadati aleichem, I will order, it's like a very strong language, like I will make an order upon you. Behala, as he says, a shock, es hashachefes, consumption, and hakadachas, the fever, mechalei seinayim, diseases that will cause you to be, as we say, very interesting, mechalei seinayim and medivas nafesh, which will cause you hopeless longing and depression, uzaratem larik, and you will sow in vain, seed in vain, v'achluhu oyveichem, and your enemies will eat it. It's all terrible things. I don't want to go into too much depth about this, but you can see one very fascinating thing that you can see here is that amongst the physical suffering, you see what he puts in right away, hopeless longing and depression. Those are actually even in a way rank higher, but we can see that right away in the first pasuk of the negative, you can see the sense of hopelessness. When a person loses hope, really that's the beginning of all negative things, right? That's the worst thing. When a person lives life with no sense of hope, no sense of positivity, that's a disaster. That's a disaster for them and for everybody around them. But before we go to that, I just want to show you, I know it's negative, and I'm sorry I'm skipping around with the pages. It's just that it works that way with the psukim. I know some of you have to turn more pages than others. I made new copies. But I want you to go to the page that says on the top of it, I'll show you what number it is. I think it's page 15. Sounds crazy, but let me see if I find mine. I'm going to scroll down in 1 second for the people on the computer. But I want to just show you something on page 15 because I want to see how this fits in with this pasuk. Let's see all the things that you do wrong that causes, so to speak, all these negative things. And one, as we said, leads to the next. So if you look on page 15, you'll see it says like this, because this is very dead. This is put very clearly. Look, if you do not listen to me, that's what it says, which means, and specifically it means by not studying the oral Torah. Interesting. Where do you see that in the pasuk? Because the pasuk says, v'im lo sishma'uli. So the word listen, listening means the oral Torah. Because maybe perhaps you say, okay, the written Torah, that I'll listen. But the oral Torah, forget about. What the rabbis say, forget about. So that's the beginning. You don't listen and you don't keep the oral Torah. What that leads to, obviously, then you loisasu es kol ha-mitzvahs. Then you won't be, as you see number two, you won't be performing all these commandments. So when you see it says a number 15 on the top, I don't know if you see. Do you have it? Do you have that one? It looks like... Sorry, is hers bigger or smaller? No, you're not slow at all. It's my fault. I don't know how to make it organized. Okay, then what happens next, he says, and then what it's going to lead you to do, and that's in Pasuk Tes. Vav, really. V'im b'chukai sa'atim asu. What you're going to do is you're going to find the people that keep the Torah disgusting, you see? So not only because, you know how it is, if you don't do something, you don't want to be looked at, like you don't want to see somebody else doing it, that makes you feel bad. So what you do is in your mind, you frame it differently. And you say, oh, they're crazy, they're silly, they're whatever, they're wasting their time. So immediately what you do is you find the people who keep the Torah disgusting. And then what that leads you, and this is we see that all the time, the next thing is not just the ordinary people, but then we say, v'im es mishpatai tigal nafshechem. So what will happen? You will hate the Torah scholars who study my laws, right? Because they're the ones who really make you feel uncomfortable. And then what does that lead you? Then not only it's not good enough that you shouldn't do it, but number five, you want to stop other people from doing it because then you really feel a little more comfortable. As he says, levilti asoises kol mitzvaysai. You see, that's in the pasuk. So you stop others, and then it's not good enough, but you have to really feel good. So what do? You deny that they're even mine. You say that there's no such mitzvah. Hashem didn't command it. So you totally deny. And the last thing is, you eventually break my covenant, as it says in the Pasuk, L'haf rechem es prisi, by denying the principles of faith. So you even deny that there is a God at all, that there's any purpose and meaning in the world, that anything matters, and then you maybe feel good for a moment. But all of that leads to all the negative things that the parasha says. A direct consequence, not even a punishment. Because we're going to see one of the main underlying themes. In a minute we're going to see what underlies all of the curses is something so negative. As we said, the positive is hope. The negative side is the hopelessness. What leads somebody to be hopeless is when they feel there's no purpose or meaning, when life is just coincidence, when things just happen because they happen and nothing has any meaning, life is really worthless then. And we're going to see how the Pesukim will say that very clearly. So I just want to show you something very interesting. This, as you can see, there are seven steps here. And the commentaries tell us, we're not going to go, as I say, so much in depth, but if you look and you analyze the curses, all these admonitions, they actually go in groups of seven. That's what they do. So Hashem gives like seven terrible things, and then another seven terrible things, and seven all, so to speak, a direct result of you, of these seven that we have here. So that's what's happening in the parasha. That's what, if you go through, that's what you'll find. Okay, I want to see one more thing about this, and then, okay. All right, now to go back into, okay, so now I want to go to a few very beautiful, a little interesting ideas, because, and again, I just want to make a little preface. Life, for many people, is difficult, no question. People suffer, and these, as we're saying, these psukim, a lot of these psukim that are mentioned here, many people have experienced a lot of them. That's the truth. If you look through them, you'll see, I mean, obviously we've all gone to exile, people have had physical sicknesses, people have had many, much more than just physical illnesses. People have had many things that have caused them tremendous, tremendous suffering. And never ever do we want to excuse or belittle or even gloss over anything that somebody's experiencing. But we just have to look a little bit deeper to understand in a more abstract way, if you want to say, what is the Chumash telling us? What is it all about, and what does this mean? So I just want you now to look at page number 16. I think it's the next page. And I'll show you, this is a very famous story from the Gemara, but it helps us to get a little bit, a drop of an insight into the concept. This is brought by many people to help us as we are reading. Just also to say that if you go, when we go to shul, and they're reading this parsha, what happens, interesting, is that the Baal Kaira, if you notice, the one who's reading, will read it very, very low and very fast, because nobody wants to concentrate on these negative things and we prefer to get over with it. And not only that, but we try not to call anybody else up to the Torah. Rather, the Baal Kaira himself gets the Aliyah, because it's almost like insulting to get somebody else to come up with all this negative stuff that is being mentioned over here. We don't want to wish it on anybody. So that's part of it. But we still have to understand in a bigger way, in a deeper way. So if you look on page 16, I know it's quite small, the words, but this is taken from the Gemara, so I should have bracketed. So it's on the bottom of the first column. Do you see where it says Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yehuda? The bottom of the first column, then realized. Do you see that? Rabbi Yonasan and Rabbi Yehuda then realized that the son of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Does everybody find it? On the first column, it's the last paragraph. The son of Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai was waiting for them, right? Okay, so what happened here, the story goes as follows. That Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai sent his son, Rabbi Lazar, and he sent him to very great righteous Tanoim, other colleagues of his, and he said he wanted them to bless his son. Okay, so his son is going there, waiting for, it's a famous thing, you'll see in a minute, waiting for a blessing. Okay. So he's standing and waiting there, engrossed in some kind of learning. They finally notice him. What happens? So it says here, and it says, they said to him, "What are you doing here?" So he said to them, "For my father said to me, go to them," and now we go to the top of the next column, "so that they should bless you," right? My father sent me that I should be blessed by you. So what do they say to him? So they said to him the following, "May it be the will of God that you sow and not reap, that you take in and not bring out, you bring out and not take in, Let your house be destroyed, and let your inn be inhabited. Let your table be disturbed, and may you not see a new year. I mean, you could imagine what he felt. I mean, what's going on here? He came to be blessed, and every word seems to be a worse curse than the one before. He couldn't understand. He's devastated. So what does he do? He goes back to his father. And the Gemara continues and tells us the story. So what did Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai's son? He came to before his father and he said to him, it was not enough that they didn't bless me, but they caused me pain with what they said to me. Interesting, he doesn't say they cursed me. He realized they wouldn't curse him, but he felt they caused me pain. They said very harsh things. Obviously, he realizes I'm not getting exactly what they said, but it was very harsh. So now, what does Rabbi Shimon say? So Rabbi Shimon said to him, what did they say to you? So he repeats, right? This is what they said. And he repeated to his father. So Rabbi Shimon explains what they said and shows how it's not negative, but it's really positive. So what happens? So he goes, he says, these are all expressions of blessings. So he explains, when they said, may it be Hashem's will that you will sow and not cut, they meant you will beget children and they shall not die. Okay, first thing. You're going to have children, so that's what sowing means, but you're not going to cut them. They're not going to, chas v'sholom, disappear. First. The next thing, interesting, they said, when they said that you will take in and not bring out, they meant that you will take in daughters-in-law and your sons will not die so that the daughter-in-laws don't have to go out, right? You'll take them in, your daughters-in-law, and they'll stay with you because your sons won't die. The next one, when it says that you're, and cause them to return to you. Let's see what the next one was. Then they said, bring out, yes, bring out and not take in. They meant that you will beget daughters who will marry, and their husbands won't die, so they don't have to come back to you, right? So they're going to leave, but they're not coming back. You don't want, God forbid, that your children should have to return without a husband or a wife. Then he says, when they said, let your house be destroyed and let your inn be inhabited. So what does that mean? So he explains, this world is compared to a temporary inn. The next world is compared to a permanent house. So what does that mean? He says, and he brings a pasuk that proves it. And he says, go to the next page. So it's page number 17. So what is the blessing? That their graves should not be, destroyed, because the house is the permanent. That's the next one. But it says the graves should be destroyed, i.e. they should not die, and thus their graves should remain unused. Rather, their inn, which is the life in this world, should last a long time. And then the beautiful one, this is one of the most famous parts, let your table be disturbed. That means that your table should be disturbed by the activities of your sons and your daughters. We say when the grandchildren come and make a mess, and that's the blessing in here. Now let them come and talk and disturb. You don't want a perfect table that nobody comes to. That's a curse. This is a blessing. And then he says, the last one that he said, may you not see a new year, that your wife shall not die. Why? And what does that have to do with the new year? And you will therefore not have to marry another wife. And you know, in Torah, there's a concept that when you get married the first year, it's considered, you know, you have special treatment, right? You're not allowed to leave her. It's a first year. So it's, you shouldn't have another first year. So the first wife should never die. Okay. All blessings, but veiled in curses. So the big question is, couldn't they just say it how it was? Why did they have to do this? Why did they have to say it in such a cryptic way and such a way that would be taken so negatively, cause him, as he says, pain, that he has to go to his father and his father has to explain what it really means, and then he could say, oh, phew, it was really a beautiful blessing. So on a simple level, some of the commentaries explain that because the sages wanted Rebbe Elazar to get a double blessing, if they bless him, and then he goes to his father, and now his father has to interpret it, so it's a double blessing. It's their blessing, and the father is interpreting it, so it's like twice. Okay, but it's not enough of an answer, really. So really, really, it ties into our parsha. It runs to the whole concept of what we're talking about. I know we've heard this many times, and there's the famous story that's told really about Parshas Kisavo, about the sun. Actually, interesting that today is Yud Aleph. Yesterday was, 2 days ago, was the yard site of the Mittel Rebbe, the second Chabad Rebbe, Reb Dov Ber. And this story is actually about him, that when he was a little boy and his father was traveling, and it was Parshas Kisavo, and they laned in the Torah all the curses, and he got really, really, really sick. And they asked him, he wasn't so little, he was obviously about 10, 11, 12, something like that. And it was to the point where maybe he was even bar mitzvah, because it says that it was almost a question, they were worried that he was so sick that he would not be able to fast on Yom Kippur. And Parshas Kisavo is read usually about a week or two before Rosh Hashanah. So you understand that he was so sick that it lasted so long because he found the parsha to be so heavy. But they asked him, this is not the first time you're here, not the first time you're in shul. What happened this year that was different? So he said, usually my father reads. That's what we know, the Alter Rebbe was the Baal Kaire, right? And when my father reads it, you don't hear curses, you only hear blessings. Because when his father read, the Alter Rebbe, as we know, similar to Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, was somebody who explained and expounded and lived in the depths of Torah, in the deep secrets of Torah. So they didn't even see the negativity. It didn't even exist. So when he read it, you didn't even hear the negativity. It was, the blessings came out in such a beautiful way. And that's what he said. But now it was just an ordinary Baal Kaire. Oy vavoy, this was terrible. I never heard such curses. And he took it so to heart that he got so sick. What's the idea? So there's many ways to explain this. And as I said, I'm not, God forbid, trying to minimize anybody's pain or anybody's suffering. But in Torah, we have a concept that when Hashem sometimes wants to give us a very high blessing, so it says a fascinating thing, that for a person to get a blessing from Hashem, as we know, we have to be worthy, right? You know, Hashem gives us a reward. So if a person wants to give a very high blessing and he starts to make an accounting and he starts to look at us and say, have you done the right thing yesterday? Did you say the right thing today? Are you really worthy? You never know. It might be able to come, the blessing. It might not be able to come. It might be stopped, not by Hashem, but by prosecuting angels along the way. They might say, who the heck? Well, who says this person deserves this? This blessing should be redirected to somebody else. They deserve it more. So what does Hashem do? Hashem says, okay, I'll just dress these deep, high blessings in something that looks negative externally. The angels won't realize. They won't stop it from coming down. And I could send it to the right address, deserving or not. And this is, in one way, an explanation of why sometimes things that are very big challenges can come to us, but really, in a deeper way, they are from a very high place, from a very high source in Hashem. Now, we ask always, I keep saying, we do. We ask for revealed blessings in a good way. That's what we all want. But when we are dealt with things that are not very good, we have to understand that doesn't mean Hashem doesn't love us. Hashem is still with us and He does love us. And these are different ways that Hashem relates. And this is the role that Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai plays, because he revealed the Zayar. And the Zayar, as we know, is the innermost depth of Torah. And that's one way of looking. So now what we're going to do is, because of that, I'd like to go to one of the psukim and to see how that pasuk looks terrible, but how it could be explained in a beautiful way. Okay, so let's see. So I'm just going to see if I can. I'm already all mixed up with my pages, but it's all good. So what I'd like you to do is to go back again to the psukim. So I'm going to find the pasuk inside, which one it is. I think it's on page 4. If I'm not mistaken, but it could be not. Ah, yes, page 4. Okay, so I'll show you a pasuk on page 4 of your booklet. Sorry, it's back and forth. Page 4, and this is pasuk Chavav, pasuk 26. Look what it says. B'shivri lachem matei lechem. When I break for you the staff of bread, which literally most commentaries say means when we have nothing to eat. You'll have no food. V'afu, and look how it explains how we know that we'll have such a food shortage. Va'afu eser noshim lachmechem b'tanur echad. 10 women will bake your bread in one oven. Meaning to say that there will not be enough bread to go around, and even 10 families will be able to put it all into one oven. That's not enough, but that's a lack, a shortage of food. That's a curse. And then veheshivu lachmechem bamishkol. So I will bring back your bread by weight, and you will. What will happen? Vachaltem. You'll eat, but loisispo. But you won't be satisfied because it's not enough bread. So you're still going to be left hungry. So in this pasuk, you can already see a very negative thing. No food, hunger, people are sharing an oven. Unfortunately, we don't have to go too much time back, and we've experienced it just in the last generation. We know, as we say, many people know people, just on a simple level, died of starvation. My husband's great-grandmother, yes, his grandfather's mother, literally died of starvation. Literally, in the shtetl, there wasn't enough food. And we know there are people like that, and then in the Holocaust and up, we know, it didn't happen that long ago. Thank God we don't have such a thing. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. We never, ever, ever have to go hungry. We just complain when we can't find the right brand of something and we're going crazy. But that's the way it was. But to understand that this pasuk, although it is very negative on one level, and it is, and we explained that Torah came down to this world. Very interesting that it came down to this world in a sense in when it was in the higher realms, in its real, so to speak, source. It deals with spiritual matters. And over there, everything is good in the spiritual realms. That's how Torah was originally. But when Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchais, and when the Jewish people sinned, and we have to live in this physical world, it wasn't the time of Mashiach, so now the Torah has to take on physical clothing. And material clothing, so to speak. It has to deal with things that are not so positive always. Things that we engage in that are challenges. And then we have it coming out sometimes in a negative way. But let's see how it could be positive. So there is a positive, believe it or not, in this pasuk. And that's a very deep way to explain this. I'll show you something very beautiful. So let's look at this, one example here. But like I said, all of these can actually be, in a certain sense, all of them could be. We don't know how, but all could be explained nicely. So here he says, when I break your staff of bread. So it says right away, break your staff of bread. So the deeper explanation of that is bread refers to Torah. Torah is really our nourishment. So as we said, when Hashem broke the Luchais, Moshe Rabbeinu broke the Luchais, what Hashem did was, he actually had to, so to speak, in a sense, almost break. What does that mean, break? He had to allow the Torah to descend down here, to get involved in the material things, in all the physical things, in all the low things. And that's what we have to do. We have to learn and do Torah in the physical realm, dealing with low matters. That's what we do most of our day. We deal with the mundane, with all the things, eating, drinking, all that kind of stuff. In Torah, everything takes on earthly terms, so to speak. And this happened, when did the Torah fall, so to speak? As we say, when the Jewish people fell, when we sinned, that's what happened. But now we have a very interesting thing. So the breaking of the Luchais, which causes the Torah to descend. So therefore we have the bread down here. But now what are we going to do with it? Now we have an interesting thing. It says, v'afu, you have to bake it, right? That's the first word here, bake. What is baking? What do you do with flour in order for it to be digestible? You put it in an oven and you heat it up. Flour on its own, if you eat, is no good. I wouldn't try it. It would actually cause indigestion. It would cause you to feel sick. That's why underbaked bread sometimes does that, right? If you bake it well enough, then your stomach can take it. What is baking? How do you bake something? You put it in an oven and you put on a fire, right? You light a fire. That's how you bake something. So it says that we have to take our fire, which is our love of Hashem, our fear of Hashem, our passion, and take the Torah, which is compared to flour, chita, the numerical value is 22, like the 22 letters of the Aleph Beis. So we take the flour, kemach, which is Torah, ein kemach, ein Torah. Torah is kemach, right? That's the spiritual nourishment. But we can't just open up a book coldly and just read it and put it down again. That's not learning. That's not Torah. Torah has to be learnt and internalized with fire, with passion, with love. If you learn Torah with love, you'll digest it. You'll internalize it. It will become yours. Not only will it become internalized, but it will be 10 women. What is 10? All the 10 powers of the soul. All the 10 powers of the soul, every part of ourself will become enveloped in the Torah. And not only will they be enveloped in the Torah, but they'll be uplifted. They'll be totally, if you want to say, they'll be totally channeled with the Torah. Why woman? Because that's the feminine. We know the feminine is the concept of the receiver. What we have to realize, and we have to be always aware, is that who gives us this power to have the love and the fear of Hashem, to infuse our learning with passion? Hashem. We are constantly on the receiving end. So we have to be grateful, and we have to daven. That's why we daven in the morning, that our day should be full of love, that our day should be full of passion, and that when we learn something, we should love it, and we should actually be able to internalize it. And that's why it's 10 women. And what do they do, as we say? They bake it in the warm oven. When you bake it in the warm oven, what do you get? You get the best product of all. You get bread. But why aren't you satisfied? That looks like such a terrible curse. It's the biggest blessing of all. Anybody who learns and then closes the book and says, wow, that was so wonderful, and now I've had enough. That's a curse. The biggest blessing in learning is that we always feel we don't have enough. We want more and more and more. That's what Torah does when a person truly learns Torah. Because when you learn Torah properly, you realize, the more you learn, you realize how little you know. And you're thirsty for more and more and more. So the biggest blessing is not to be satisfied. In the spiritual realm, a person should never feel that they can go to sleep and they have it all. We never have it all. There's always so much more. So you see how magnificent a little pasuk here can be totally switched, in a sense, if you look at it in a more deep way, that it's not a curse, but it's actually a blessing. And this is obviously what the Mittler Rebbe heard when his father leaned. He heard these deep secrets of what it meant. So for us, it's not so simple. I want to move on now to the next part. It's a very, very important... Oh, good, I'm so happy time didn't run away, because it's a very, very important other aspect to all of these negative things. Okay, underlying it all, as I hinted before, is one big problem. And also, you know, we can look at it here because it comes up, this pasuk, many times. You have pasuk chavav, look at pasuk chav zayin. It says it there clearly. Ve'im b'zayis laisishmu. This is repeated a few times. And if despite this, see, this is on page 4, right? Pasuk 27. If despite this, you still do not listen to me, right? So I've done all these negative things and you still haven't woken up. And what will you do? The halachtem imi bikeri. This is a very big word. And you walk with me, you go with me, you treat me, and they translate here as happenstance. What is the word keri? This is a big word. Okay, this word is repeated, I'll tell you now, many, many, many times over in the parsha, in this part. You go with me, bikeri. So I just want to show, I feel bad, you have to turn again, because I just want to show you, just if you can go now to page number 18. I want to show you the Rashi. On page 18, Rashi will tell us what the word keri means. There's many different explanations. We're going to concentrate really on one, but I just want to show you a few. Keri, 21. See, I'm sorry, it's page 18, and it's Pasuk Chaf Aleph. So, im telchu imi bikeri, if you behave, here they translate casually. So, Rabbi Seinu Amru, our rabbi say, what does it mean, keri? Arai, casually, temporary, bimikre, by chance, which means she'enei ela leprakim, a thing that occurs only sometimes, which means that you just treat Hashem as, you know, like a Sunday habit, you know, like some people have, you know, whatever, I'm 2 day a year Jew, right? So I'll pay attention to you, God, when I'm in the mood, you know, once in a while. That's by chance. That's occasionally. That's one way to translate bakeri. In other words, it's not an integral, real part of our life, you know, like we have 2 hands, 2 feet, 2 eyes, and a neshama. But this person doesn't look at it that way, right? They look at it as if, oh, whenever I'm in the mood. So that's bikeri. That's a problem, as we can understand. And then Rashi gives another explanation. Menachem Perish, Lashon Minya. Let's see. It's very interesting, this one. As an expression of holding back. And he gives an example, haikar, which is hold back your foot. And then he says, withheld of spirit, which he says, v'karev lashon zeh, l'targumay shel unkelos. Unkelos explains, lashon kaishi, hardness, for they harden their heart to hold themselves back from bringing themselves close to me. So somebody who holds themselves back from being close to Hashem, That's Bekeri. Somebody who has like a coldness to everything, an apathy, not interested. And also not sometimes it's even worse. It's like this stubbornness that I am not going to listen. I am not interested, right? I don't want to be involved. Dafka, you know, that dafka kind of thing. That's Bekeri, and that's a problem. But as we said, this, I just want to go to the next page. I'll show you. I want to show you one very, very important one. If you look on page 19, so it's right away the next page, Bekeri, so the Targum Yonasan says, Ba'arai, as we said, like temporary happenstance, you know, just once in a while. The Chizkuni says, Loimar einai inyan kavua rak mikrahu. This is a very important word. This is not something which is permanent. It's only temporary. Or mikra, the big word is coincidence. This is a word I want to concentrate in a minute. Sometimes people look at life and say everything is a coincidence. People who live life and think that nothing has meaning and that things that happen just happen by chance, that's the disaster underlying all of these negative things. And this is repeated on and on, over and over again in the parsha. Somebody who treats Hashem as if he's not really there because everything just happens by chance, well, then Hashem says, that's fine. If you think everything happens by chance, well, then I'll let it happen by chance. So all these negative things could just happen by chance, right? Because there's no God, there's no meaning, there's nobody running, there's nobody loving, there's nobody taking care of you. So everything will just happen by chance. Whatever will happen, so to speak. Obviously, nothing happens by chance, but that's how you will feel it, and that's how you will take it. And as we said, the deepest, the most challenging thing that a person can go through is when they lose all sense of hope, all sense of purpose and meaning, and that there is a God, that there is something underneath everything, that there's something guiding every single step of our life. If you don't have that, life is even more challenging than it is with its regular challenges. I just want to see, so that's what the Mefarshim say, each one in their own way. And the Orach Chaim says, just one important thing, the Rabbeinu Bechaya says, it's mentioned many times, he tells us that what happens is a person can have things happen to him and they're good. So good things happen to a person, that's fantastic. So he says a person should be filled with gratitude. And if sometimes not such good things happen, then a person should reflect. In other words, a person should never, ever, ever assign that anything that happens to him, it just happened that way. So that's a disaster. So as soon as, whether it be positive or negative, a person has to look deeper and see who's making it happen. Maybe there's something I can learn from it, whatever it may be, or at least I can know that it's not just happening by chance, as we say. And then some people say it should be a lesson, person should be motivated to grow, person, if they have a challenge, they shouldn't look at it as if it's just something stam happening, it should be something that can help them grow, come closer to Hashem. Okay, all of these different ways of looking at the word keri. Okay, and this is a big one. Now, I want to show you, let me see, before we go to the Kedushas Levi, it was just, I just want to read you just a few lines. This is just so beautiful. This is just, I'm interesting, is Rebbetzin Jungres. She has a very interesting article about, she says that the Rambam, she quotes from the Rambam, that the Rambam also quotes it. He says, if people look at life that everything just happens by chance, he says it's actually cruel. That's the word the Rambam uses. And she says, why is it cruel? Just because, why would you use the word cruel? You might say ignorant, stupid, and superficial. Why cruel? Just because when a person looks at life that it's always by chance, what happens is, as it says in this parsha, well, then they're going to keep being revisited by all these negative things that are just happening by chance. And that's cruel, because cruel is that you're going to keep on suffering and you're not going to have any meaning in your life. There couldn't be anything more cruel than that. That's how she explains it. But anyways, time is rushing, because there's another beautiful pasuk also that I want to see about the end. But just want to show you one, I just want to read one beautiful thing. This you don't have. From Rabbi Sachs, just how he says it so beautifully. I can't say it myself, I have to say it in his words. The most magnificent words. So Rabbi Sachs says also that this parsha has a lot to do, as we're talking a lot about hope. It's about the concept of hope. And he says, if you look around in other cultures, especially like the Greek culture, was all about tragedy. So interesting, in Yiddishkeit, we don't really have a word for tragedy. In Hebrew, they have to take the English word, tragedia, you know, because we don't have such a word. There's no such thing as tragedy. Nothing just happens by chance and that you just suffer because I don't know what decided to make you suffer. Everything has purpose and meaning. Yes, there is suffering, but everything has purpose and meaning. But the main thing he says is that we can never lose hope. And not only don't we lose hope, but the Torah is all about hope. That's what it is. Why? And how do we get hope from the Torah? Because as he says, because Hashem might hide his face, but he will not break his word. He will fulfill his promise. He will redeem his children. He will bring them home. He says, beautiful thing, he says, hope is one of the very greatest Jewish contributions to Western civilization. And he says, I call Judaism the voice of hope in the conversation of humankind. It's very beautiful how he puts it. And he says, and I'll tell you why in a minute, we'll see where he gets this from in our parsha even. And he says, like, it's very fascinating, he says, like a signal of transcendence. Which means there's nothing inevitable or even rational about hope, as we know, right? There's nothing really rational. In a way, hope is a bit of an irrational kind of a thing because you hope despite, right? Despite everything looking like there's no hope, you still hope. He says interesting thing. He says that the reality that underlies the universe is not deaf to our prayers, blind to our aspirations, indifferent to our existence, which means Hashem, which underlies everything, hears us. There's somebody who hears us. There's somebody who actually cares. We are not wrong to strive to perfect the world, refusing to accept the inevitability of suffering and injustice. But he says, but what we find is, he says that the key to all of this is our curses in our parsha. Because as he says, because what they show us is that even though we will betray, and the last few psukim that we didn't read, time just runs, is that Hashem actually says he will return us. And I want to show you, I'll show you in a second, he will actually remember the forefathers and he's going to take us back to Eretz Yisrael. There's always hope. After all the negativity, there is always hope. And that's what he says. It's always, Hashem is there. He says, let me just see how he says. He says, that Hashem exists, that he cares about us. And let's see. That covenant transforms our understanding of history. God has given his word, and he will never break it. However much we may break our side of the promise, without these beliefs, we would have no reason to hope at all. And this is really what our parsha is, that we break the promise. We do, we know we do. We do sometimes look at life and things and whatever, in whichever subtle way, we just don't describe it all to Hashem, and we think things just happen, right? I just happened to be there. I was at the wrong place, at the wrong time, met the wrong person, said the wrong thing to me, looked at me the wrong way. It just happened. That's how we live life. Unfortunately, we do. And he says, nevertheless, we might give up on Hashem. He doesn't give up on us ever, ever, ever. And I just want to show you, and I just want to see which page, the psukim, two or three beautiful, beautiful psukim that tell us about this hope. I want to show you in the end. Okay, so let's see if we can find it, which page it is. It is on page, I'll scroll over here and I'll see. I think it's on page six, five and six. Let's see. Sorry, back again 100 times, I know. Let's see the psukim on page five. Okay, so look at, I think it's page five. Let me see. Yeah, page five. It's Pasuk Mem. Look what it says. V'hisvadu es avoinam. They will confess their iniquity. V'es avoin avoyis. And this is saying at the end. So after all the negative things, so we will confess. And then they, and as we say, b'malam asher malu, be all their betrayal, like the iniquity of their fathers, their betrayal that they dealt me. V'af asher holchu imi bekeri. Right? They will confess that they went, walked with me with this happenstance attitude. And then Hashem says, v'af ani I too will treat them as happenstance even after they do vidui, according to some commentaries, because we're not sincere or we blame it on our fathers. We say it's their fault, whatever it may be. But nevertheless, after all of that, despite all of that, what will Hashem do? The heivesi oisam be'eretz oyveihem. As he says, I will and bring them back while in the land of their enemies. I az yikana levavam, their clogged hearts become humbled. Ha'arav az yirtzu es avaynam, and they will gain appeasement for their iniquity. But then, in Pasuk Membeis, v'zacharti es brisi, I will remember my covenant with Yaakov. Do you see? Afes brisi Yitzchak, with Yitzchak. The afes brisi Avram, and with Avram. It's the opposite way around. It should say Avram Yitzchak Yaakov. It says Yaakov Yitzchak Avram. One explanation is because remember we said at the beginning, what's the root cause of all the negativity? Is the not learning Torah. Who is the father that stands for Torah? Yaakov, right? Avram is chesed, kindness. Yitzchak is davening. And Yaakov is the learning Torah. Key is we got to fix, we got to reverse what we did wrong. How do we reverse it? By starting to learn. And as we said, learning with fire and internalizing, and it should mean something to us. And then our life will look different and feel different. And things will improve, as he says beautifully. And then he says also, look at the Yaakov has a vav, extra vav. So I saw something magnificent. It says that Eliyahu Anavi, in some, it says actually Yaakov with an extra vav 5 times in Tanakh. He stole it, the vav, shouldn't be there, the vav. He stole it from Eliyahu Hanavi. Eliyahu Hanavi's name, at the end of Eliyahu has a vav, right? But there are 5 times when it just says Eliya, instead of Eliyahu. What does it mean Yaakov took the vav? He takes the vav and he holds on to it. Why? Because he has a deal with Eliyahu. He says to Eliyahu, you want your vav back? I'll give it back to you when you do what you're meant to do. And what's Eliyahu meant to do? Eliyahu is the one that's going to come and tell us. He's going to return the children, as we say, to their parents, the parents to the children, and bring Mashiach. So Yaakov says, I'm holding your vav because I'm waiting for you to fulfill your mission. And when you fulfill your mission, you get your vav back. What is vav? Vav is 6. 6 is the 6,000 years, right? The 6th millennium, that's when Mashiach is coming now. Right now, it's already just about the end, as we say. And 5 times, because it's a promise, the 5 fingers of the hand, that he took Eliyahu's hands, he said, I'm making like a promise with you, like I'm holding you accountable, that you have to do your job. And why is Yaakov even more than Avram and Yitzchak invested in the fact that Eliyahu better bring Mashiach? Because who is the one that went into Golus first, started all the Golus? Yaakov, right? In our parsha, yes. Next week's parsha, Yaakov, well, not next week, he doesn't go yet, but after Yosef goes to Egypt, who comes to Egypt? Yaakov. And that's the beginning of our exile, as we say. The beginning of all exiles is Yaakov going down to Egypt. So he feels responsible. I went to Egypt. I want to make sure Eliyahu takes them out. And that's a very beautiful thing. And we see again the hope that underlies even at the end of all of the negativity. There's no way that as a Jew, we read this and we say, give up hope. We don't give up hope. There's hope always, but it's not just hope. There's actually a clear message that dictates exactly how we're meant to act. Start learning, learning with, you know, as we say, with meaning and purpose and love and fear and emotion. And when the learning affects you, your whole life is different. Everything changes. And I feel bad to tell you orally, quickly, because we don't have that much time, the Barditchever, Levi Yitzchak of Barditchev, always has a beautiful way. He says that there's a whole conversation here. I just want to, let me see if I can, I want to just see it, do it justice very quickly. I know there isn't time, but I just want to, if I can find my paper. Hope I can find it. I'll show you. I'm going to see something beautiful because he says, I had it in Hebrew, but we don't have time. Okay, where is it? Okay, I'll just read you in English. This is a translation. It says, I remember how they appeared when I took them out of Egypt. So that's what he says. Then too, they were no better than now. And yet they elevated themselves and received the Torah. I cannot therefore despair of their present condition. They will still awaken and ascend to the spiritual heights, right? Hashem says, I remember, Zacharti, I remember the Jewish people before I gave them the Torah. They weren't such great sheikhs then. So we'll get back, even if they don't look so amazing. And Reb Levi Yitzchak gives a beautiful mashal. He says, imagine if somebody marries off their daughter, or let's say somebody themselves gets married to a woman, and she comes from a very poor family. So if she comes from a poor family, if he's unaware, if they, you know, if they acted that they were wealthy, well, then after the wedding, if the father-in-law doesn't come with the dowry, he's going to be upset. Where's the dowry? But if the father-in-law was honest at the beginning and he knew that this girl comes from a poor family, well, after the wedding, he can't have any complaints. You knew you were marrying. She was poor. So she's poor now. So they don't have money to pay you the dowry. What could you do? So the Bar Dechever says, when Hashem took us, we were poor, we were Nebach. We weren't any great sheikhs in Egypt. How could Hashem have any complaints about us? Just accept us the way we are. Whatever we do, we try our best. And this is the way he looks at this parsha, that we have to understand that Hashem does look at us in a positive way, because he always, not only is there hope for us, but Hashem never loses his hope in us. And that's a very big part of it. And beautifully also, the end of the parasha finishes off with a whole different topic. The topic of, it's called Erchin. It's a hard topic, evaluation. In a nutshell, we're not going to go into that part, but in a nutshell, what it does is, it says that if a person decides they want to donate money to the Beis HaMikdash, and they say, I'll donate money, how much money? As much as I am worth. What does that mean? So the Torah, funnily enough, gives a sum of money based on male, female, and age. Nothing to do with anything else. The person could be whatever. A Nebach could be a genius. The person could be strong or weak, sick or healthy. It doesn't take away or add to their, doesn't diminish or add to their value. There's a set value for age and what if you're a male or a female. Why? Because this is such a powerful thing. The Torah tells us that every person has immeasurable value. And it doesn't go by their talents, by their abilities, by what they produce, by how nice they look, or how nice they are, or how wealthy they are. It has nothing to do. Hashem decides that every person has a fixed value. The value is that they are a neshama, and that's immeasurable. But because they promise, they have to give a certain amount of money. So the Chayza says a beautiful thing. That concept follows this negative, all the curses. Because after reading all these terrible things, a person might feel down. Look at all the terrible things that are going to happen to us. We're going to be sick, and we're going to starve, and we're going to, all the enemies. I didn't read, some of the psukim are so harsh. It says that people will be running, and actually nobody will even be chasing them. Unfortunately, you know, you're full of anxiety. You know, that's unsettled, terrible things that will happen. So a person's going to feel very down. So the Chayza says, that's why the Torah finishes and tells us, no. Don't allow yourself to feel down. You have immeasurable value in the eyes of Hashem. And nobody else, nobody, no other human being, can ever evaluate you as a human being. You are a world. Everybody is their own world, as we know. And therefore, never feel down. Rather feel that you can connect to Hashem and that you do make a difference just by being here and just by whatever you can do to choose at every moment to do something right. And this is a very powerful concept. So as we can see, just this is Chazak, Venis Chazek, really the end of Parash Chumash Vayikra, finishes off with these ideas. But the point is, as we say, that a person should never, even though it has a negative ending in almost at the end, but as we say, we have to look deeper always, and in life we always have to look deeper, and we have to live life with meaning and purpose, and nothing happens by chance. There is zero coincidence, that's for sure. Nothing in our life happens by chance. I'll just share something with you.